We're talking now with 3rd District Congressman, Congressman Frank Lucas, of course, former chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. And Congressman, several things to talk about right now as far as things going on in D.C. and beyond. Interesting how things have worked out with the Environmental Protection Agency, though, in regards to this kind of going back and forth with Corteva and the conversation over Enlist Duo and Enlist One. I mean, who would have thought we might get EPA to admit they needed to do something different?
You're exactly right, Ron. This is a situation where we all thought, based under earlier registration orders, that we were going to be just fine, that these products would be available to our producers, Enlist One, Enlist Duo. And then all of a sudden, EPA determines that's not the case and basically tries to shut down the use of products. Now, these are important in 46 Oklahoma counties. So I and my colleagues immediately went after it, 35 of us all together signing on a letter pressing the EPA director, Michael Regan, expressing our concerns and demanding an explanation of the new restrictions they were trying to impose. I turned my science committee staffers loose on the EPA, being ranking member this time of the House Science Committee. And in the next session of Congress, we're in the majority, hopefully chairman of the full committee, sent my scientific people over to say, explain to us exactly why you've changed your ruling. What's the justification of a scientific perspective? We also had the support of various Oklahoma ag leaders, from Secretary of Agriculture Blaine Arthur to the leadership of the Farm Bureau and the Oklahoma Soybean Association and a variety of other folks. And the fact of the matter is EPA reversed their decision and will allow all Oklahoma counties to use the Enlist products. Not very often do you win with the EPA, but on this day, rhyme and reason and scientific logic prevailed. I don't call it a miracle, but I do think it's just an example of how hard we have to work when silly things are done by federal agencies here in the nation's capital.
Seemed like they were busy trying to justify themselves with the endangered species of particular regions around the country. And in a lot of cases, they didn't do their homework.
And while most of the EPA staffers are career people, the senior management, the director, are political appointees. So when you change administrations, you change the perspective, you change attitudes. And I would say it was necessary now to reach out and get the Biden appointees' attention over there that, no, just because it's a new administration in the White House doesn't mean that you get to play by different scientific rules. Science is science. Standards are standards. Follow the rules.
Let's talk about some of the other things that are really important to U.S. agriculture, our farmers and ranchers right now. And if anybody's been to the co-op lately or their local farm and ranch store, they know how expensive some of these inputs are, especially when you start talking and pricing fertilizer. That was already a problem before Russia-Ukraine, but that's exacerbated the whole issue now, it seems.
Oh, absolutely, Ron. And I know this from a personal perspective. We didn't get enough moisture where Linda and I live in Roger Mills County to get the wheat in until late October. It was too late in the season for much growth, so we were going to wait till the spring to top dress. Of course, it never rained, and it never rained, and it never rained. And then only finally in the last 10 days have we had enough rain to consider. So I went down to visit with my local supplier after not having discussed the price of fertilizer since the first day of October. And like every other producer, I about fell down when I discovered instead of the $400 and some a ton last year for 4600 nitrogen, we were talking $1,100 a ton, $1,200 a ton. I mean, the price just keeps moving from day to day to day. And my local fellow pointed out that he was hesitant about ordering much because he wasn't sure his producers could afford those prices, the input cost and how that would affect things. So this is reaching out and grabbing us all. Part of the problem here is that over time in the United States and around the world, we become addicted to cheap support sources of fertilizer. And before the Ukrainian war, the Russians were the world's biggest exporter of fertilizer, providing approximately 50% of the world's ammonium nitrate, and one of the key ingredients in nitrogen fertilizers. The Russians were number two in exporters of potash, another important ingredient. And by the way, Belarus, then the country next door to the Ukraine and Russia that's under Russian domination, was another 18% of the world exports on potash. So when you're talking almost 40% of the world's potash in two countries now that are off limits to do business with because of the war, suddenly it starts to turn things upside down. And not only that, But with the scramble to replace those sources, and much of Europe and the Middle East and Asia are primary buyers of Russian product, then when those products weren't available, those people went out into the world market and coming after our sources. So all of a sudden, Ron, we're in a huge fertilizer squeeze, and I'm not sure how it gets any better, but it is a classic example of why you can't just buy the cheapest product from some of the most disagreeable places. You have to maintain domestic production. You have to have production from stable, consistent suppliers. And we're in the process, those of us down on the farm, we're getting a real bad reminder lesson about that with the price of fertilizer right now.
Any ideas on how we turn things around, or is this just going to be a slow process of trying to replace some suppliers?
I think, in fairness, it's more of a slow process than anything. Having the Russians stop invading their neighbors so that people could do business with them legitimately would help. I think having the ability to produce in the nitrogen area, because we're in Oklahoma, we're on an ocean of natural gas in the Anadarko Basin, getting the manufacturing plants back up and going, being able to produce that. But I see why there's a hesitation from the producers of turning the natural gas into nitrogen fertilizer. They're waiting to see what happens in Ukraine. Do they take the risk? But oh my gosh, Ron, this is a part of the unintended consequences of the Russians invading the Ukrainians. Not only has it disrupted our fertilizer supplies, our access to potash, but think about the Ukrainian people themselves. Approximately 10% on a given year of the wheat that goes into the world export market comes from Ukraine. 11, 12% of feed grains, primarily corn, that go into the world markets now most likely won't be available because they won't be able to plant. We're talking about at least, in my opinion, 2, maybe 3 years of wild disruptions on the price side. But again, it doesn't matter how expensive, or I should say, how valuable wheat becomes as we try to make up for the Ukrainians' lost production. If fertilizer goes to who knows how high, we'll still be behind the curve. So we've got a challenging time. This is where good management is going to be really important in 2022 and 2023, Ron.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just out this week, we've got the president giving his what some folks are calling a wish list as far as his fiscal year 2023 budget proposal. What jumps out to you that's important to rural Oklahoma, rural America?
He substantially increases all non-defense spending, and he had to agree with us that with what the Russians and the Chinese are up to around the world, that we have to spend more on our defense to be able to defend ourselves and our allies around the planet. I'm still poring through the numbers. And remember, the president's budget is a proposal. Congress will pass both in the House and the Senate a budget resolution that will actually become the document for the appropriation bills to proceed from. As a part of finishing up this year's regular appropriations process, they agreed, the appropriators did in the House and Senate, on what the target number should be for the coming year. So the basic blueprint is there. I would just say we'll have to get out and hustle and work hard, because whether it's food production or a variety of issues that make a difference in our part of the world, if we're not willing to commit the resources, then we're going to be not going to be able to expand our capacity or meet the world needs. There are going to be some hungry people. It won't be so much, Ron, in our part of the world, but think about where that Ukrainian wheat, for instance, used to go to Egypt and the Middle Eastern countries, Eastern Europe, Western Asia. Those folks are going to be in a world of hurt just getting the food.
Speaking of the president, he did make a remark. I'm not sure if this was in his prepared remarks or off the cuff, but saying that there will be food shortages. And for somebody that's in agriculture, I know that's that caught your attention, I'm sure.
Absolutely, Ron. And this brings us to a topic that I've been trying to get across to folks here in Congress. Next year is the 5-year reauthorization of the Comprehensive Farm Bill, the safety net, everything from crop insurance to conservation, rural development, nutrition, all of those things, 2023. There will be naysayers here in D.C. who will say that because we might have $11 wheat next year or $12 wheat, we don't need to have a safety net. That is completely wrong, because not only will those high prices be temporary, a year or two, until production comes back on in these other places once their wars are over, I hope, but also the dramatic increase in input cost, whether it's fertilizer, seed, fuel, the diesel to run the tractors, the processing, the transportation. If anything, it's going to be a wilder year for a farmer or a rancher in 2023 and 2024 than it is right now, because everything will still be out of whack. The safety net's important, but we have to fight off those people who will say, you don't need anything because you've got these high prices. No, those high prices are temporary, but the input cost that eat up the profit margin, if there is one, they're probably going to stay for even longer.
Bottom line, any thoughts that you wanted to share with your constituents there in the 3rd District? It's going to be an interesting political season ahead, if nothing else. We've got a lot of races that will be decided, I know, in that June primary coming up.
Oh, absolutely, Ron. Two U.S. Open, an open U.S. Senate seat, a re-election in one Senate seat, an open congressional seat in eastern Oklahoma, all the statewide offices. It will be total mayhem. It'll be wild and crazy. But it is democracy at its very best, and folks need to dig through all of the ads and the advertisements and the silly things that'll be said, and bear in mind what matters, why it matters, how we got to this point, where we're going, and make good, solid decisions, because we're going to have enough of a challenge dealing with the world that we're in over the coming years. This may be one of those times that we've not seen since before my birth, that my parents and grandparents used to talk about during the Second World War, when the food supply issues become critically important and obvious to every citizen. They need America's farmers and ranchers. We're going to do our best, but we've got to have the seed, we've got to have the fertilizer, we've got to have the fuel to make that happen. And those are the kind of challenges we're going to face. We'll step up to meet the world need, but there are going to be some very nervous people when prices reflect tight, tight supplies over the course of the next year.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Frank Lucas talking with us on the long line from his office in our nation's capital. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.